Patriot. County 23, I'll give you a correct address, but you do have a fire in a one-story ordinary. Looks like it's about 40 by
5-5.
Over to 273-273.
Well, good evening and welcome to another edition of Fire and Training. I'm your host, Douglas Klein, and we are excited about tonight's show. We're going to have a lot of good conversation that's going to take place. And we're going to focus on developing a training program or a training calendar if you've not already done so for the new year. Happy New Year to everyone. And I want to make sure that everyone realizes that Fire and Training is dedicated to the men and women who are in the streets every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 or 366 days of the year, to giving them the best information and to helping our folks get the best training and education that they possibly can get. And it's dedicated to making sure all these efforts go for everyone going home. Well, like I said, tonight we want to focus in on a couple of great topics that are important to every fire training officer. It's important to every fire chief. It's important to every firefighter as they begin to make sure that they're trained and they're getting the right training in the field. But of course, anytime that we start talking about training, anytime that we begin looking at this, there's other factors that go into it. You know, tonight we're going to focus in where you will have the opportunity to get from me a training calendar that would work for the most complex career departments, and it can be tailored any way that is going to fit the smallest of rural volunteer departments to maximize what you're getting for training and to be able to maximize, obviously, anything that we can get as we're trying to make sure we're capturing it for records, but specifically for your ISO rating. Before we kick off into that tonight, couple things that I want to point out is there were some, this time of year, especially today and tomorrow, the 5th and the 6th of January, we need to honor the courage, the dedication, the fortitude, the sacrifice, and the remembrance of those who've gone before us and paid the ultimate sacrifice. And one of the first groups or one of the first instances I want to talk about is out in Seattle from January the 5th, 1995, which is the Mary Payne fire. This fire was at Mary Payne's food products plant, South Dearborn Street and Maynard Avenue South. It was reported at 7 p.m. on January the 5th, 1995, when a member of a band practiced in the building called 911. It began as a one-alarm fire and eventually went to and escalated to five alarms. There were seven other firefighters who managed to escape from the building, from the collapse, one barely making it by hanging on to the remaining of the parts of the floor and pulling himself to safety. Today, we want to remember Lieutenant Walter Kilgore, Lieutenant Gregory Shoemaker, firefighters Randall Terlicker, and James Brown. We also want to remember, starting tomorrow, in Philadelphia, the honors, the courage, the dedication, the fortitude, the sacrifice, and remembering Matthew Latournu on the fire that was North Colorado Street in a row house occupancy with a floor collapse. You know, the big thing that we look is that these are incidents that occur, you know, that we oftentimes, as new firefighters come in, don't remember. They don't remember these events. The last one that I have on my mind for tonight is from January the 6th, 1981, from Boston, Massachusetts, remembering Lieutenant Paul Latini and firefighter James M. Gibson, internal upper floor collapsed during operations conducting at a building fire at 16-17 Arlington Street. The upper floors collapsed internally, trapped them and four others for several hours. Several of the firefighters were injured as well. There was a huge, intense rescue operation that took place over hours to remove these folks. And this particular incident escalated to 8 alarms. So with that in mind, this is where I come back to the thoughts about what are we doing for training and how are we training and what is our mentality towards training or philosophies or better yet, our attitudes towards training. Well, one of the first things I want to say is that I know that there are people out there that take their pencils out or their pens or the stroke of the keypad and they're pencil whipping or documenting training that's going on that they're really probably not doing to at all or to the degree and intensity that they should be doing. So one of the things that I did several years ago was design a calendar. And in designing this training calendar, it looks at every month of the year. It looks at every week of the month. It's specific to that year itself, because most months have 4 weeks in them. About every third month, as it works out, you would have a month that has 5 weeks in it. So what do we have to do to train the folks that are out there? Well, we're going to kind of wrap these things around the concepts of what's in ISO, but also what might be in your organization. So we're going to look at firefighter training. We're going to look at officer training. We will look at hazmat. We will look at driver. We will look at any type of technical rescue that we really need to be doing, looking at our facilities and drills, and also adding in OSHA compliance. The other part of it is if you got specialty teams like marine, firefighting, dive rescue, operations, wildfire training, if you have a specific hazmat team, if you've got urban search and rescue, those type of things you can add in there as well for organizations. You know, the one thing I do want to point out to our listeners tonight is that if you're on the line and you're listening in and you want to join into this conversation, you're more than welcome. In fact, we encourage you to join in. That call-in number for our guests is 760-454-8852. Again, the guest call-in number is 760-454-8852. Once you're in, press 1. That gets you all the way up into the host queue, and then I'll be able to see and bring you onto the show, and you can join in some of these conversations. So what drove the concept behind creating a training calendar? Well, for being in a training role for a number of years, one of the things that I saw that was a gap is that most people didn't know what to do to train. And, in fact, they would show up in volunteer departments, and they would get there on their training night, which you may have, you know, 2 training nights a month, 3 training nights, or 4 training nights. And they would show up, and they would go, well, what are we going to do tonight? Well, I don't know. What do you want to do? And you spent more time trying to figure out what you were doing. There was no plan. You know, this is also a problem for career departments as officers that are in the streets, the company officers who are the true trainers of the fire service, you know, oftentimes may not be as savvy with what needs to be trained on, but they should be training their firefighters. And then we've got a lot of folks that get thrust into training positions in volunteer departments or smaller departments that, you know, they're the person that is good at it or has an instructor certification, and all of a sudden they find themselves landing in this role, and they're like, holy cow, this is inundating, it's overwhelming, you know, what do I do? How do I do the things that I need to get done? How do I pick the topics? What do I do? The way that I developed the calendar was I've looked at the concept of we are trying to get the best training that we possibly can for our people that are in the streets. So what better way to do that than to focus in on the positions that you have? And I tied those specifically to ISO so that you can maximize the amount of credit that you get on ISO for training points. So the first category we're going to talk about in this calendar, and if you would like this calendar, I'll be more than happy to share it with you. All you have to do is email me at KleinD, that's C-L-I-N-E-D, at Horry County, H-O-R-R-Y, county is spelled out, .org. I'll be more than happy to share this with you. Just email me, and I'll shoot it over to you. But in every week, one of the things that I know that you have to get done for ISO is 192 hours of what they call company training a year. And that equates to 16 hours a month. That is if you're going to get maximum credit for company level training. Now in career departments, that should be fairly easy. In combination departments or departments that only have part-time firefighters that are working and it's not a consistent basis of when they work, and in volunteer departments, we know that it's going to be very difficult to maximize all those hours within the year to get maximum credit in ISO. So how I broke the calendar down is by weeks associated to the months of the throughout the year. So in each week, week one, week two, week three, week four, and I stopped at week four with the firefighter. So each month, four weeks in the month, there is a firefighter topic that is associated to that week. So I'll give you an example. In January, week one is orientation to the fire service, history of the fire service, safety and health components that you should be focused on. Week two, I did fire behavior. Week three, I put in building construction. Week four, I put in personal protective equipment. So if you're breaking this down and you got to get 16 hours of company training a month. So basically how you do that is there's 4 hours each month or each week of the month that you should be working on these topics. That gives you your company level training. The other thing that I did is I looked at in the ability to break this down. In week three, I looked at single company evolutions, which I used the 14-10 drills. So in January, the single company drill was evolution number one. So when I started looking at other topics that are required, like driver training and officer training and hazmat training, well, let's go with week one was officer training. Well, if you're breaking this down by monthly, you need 12 hours a year in ISO. So in week one for officers, there was a topic, writing employee evaluations. If we move to February, it's operational safety responsibilities and consequences. In March, I had crew resource management, commanding incident operations in April, motivation and leadership techniques in May, et cetera, as we go on through the year. Well, the biggest thing that you're looking at this is some of those topics may go longer than that, and that's okay. The biggest thing that what we're focusing on is that each one of these topics, even when I go to the driver, the officer, the hazmat, those components, even firefighter, all are associated to the NFPA standards. Like for firefighter, it's NFPA 1001. For officer, it's 1021. For driver, it's 1002. For hazmat, it's 472. It's giving you all these components that go in to be able to get, you know, the topics you need covered. So firefighter, again, if we're doing company training, it's 192 hours a year, 16 hours a month. There are 4 weeks in a month. There's 4 topics per month, and you spend the time, you know, going through those topics, doing those things as far as education to those. You can expand them out even further, having the ability to do your drills, you know, adds into that for your company level training. If you're going to your training facility to do these drills, well, then you can capture facility hours training, which is 18 hours a month. So basically, you have to get about an hour and a half each month as facilities training. Now, a lot of folks change that up, and they may do their facility training. They may bring their folks in for, you know, quarterly training to get 18 hours. They're probably doing, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours of training a quarter or so, so that they're getting that in, and they're out at the training center doing those things. One of the pieces that you want to look at is making sure that you're maximizing the time that you have. Here's where it's really easy. Is that a career department, you're there for 24 hours. Some folks are there for 48 hours at a time. And if you're on a 10 and 14 cycle, you're doing a lot of time. You're still doing that same amount of hours if you were working a 24-hour shift. It's just broken up over multiple days. You have the opportunity to get a lot done. Where it becomes a little more complex is the smaller rural volunteer departments who show up and train for 3 hours a week, you know, a couple times a month, 3 times a month, 4 times a month, however it is. You know, you can adapt this calendar that I have towards that. And again, that calendar is free to you. All you have to do is reach out to me. I'll give you the email address at the end of the show here again to be able to get it. The things that I'm looking at, though, is we fail to actually focus on what we do every day or have the potential to do every day, you know, in our business. we like the big sexy stuff, so to speak. You know, a lot of what we find is that our folks need to go back to the basics and be able to, you know, master those again. We get really rusty when we don't do some things. So, like in February, I ended up on the fourth week in January with personal protective equipment. In February, I did SCBA. Well, if you're looking at OSHA standards, and that is also added into this calendar as well, but if you're looking at OSHA standards, it's required that you do certain training with your SCBA per OSHA standards. There are NFPA standards for that. And again, you know, search and rescue, we're looking at the rapid intervention component, you know, which is 1407 training that falls in there. March has forcible entry. Again, SCBA and respirators. A lot of what happens is you may want to break up some of the stuff you're doing. It may be that you're working to get, you know, specific components of your SCBA, like doffing and donning, or air consumption use, or air consumption test, all those things. So I broke it up a little bit there between February and March to get those in. Got fire streams and ventilation in March as well. Well, you see that we're back to the basics, and back to the basics is very, very important when you're, you know, trying to keep your folks ready to respond at any given time, especially in departments that don't run a lot of calls or a lot of fires. And that is a trend across the United States. Our fire volume is not like it was back in the America burning time period in the late 70s, early 80s, the war years of the 70s. So, you know, we have to continually work on that. We've also diversified what we do. You know, back in the 70s, there wasn't as much hazmat that we had to deal with. There wasn't all the technical rescue that was, you know, associated to it in most places. And a lot of the OSHA standards began showing up in the late 70s, early 80s with what you had to do and meet all those standards. Well, a lot of what you can tie into for fire training or hazmat training or, you know, the awareness of things that you're going to respond, like trench awareness, confined space awareness, you know, preventing falls, things like that, hearing protection, respiratory protection, all those things are required that you go through, but they also fit into standards. A good example is if you look at hazard identifications and the Right to Know Act and looking at MSDS sheets and doing a hazard assessment around your station, You've probably covered hazmat right to know, but you've also covered components in hazmat, like identification of hazmat, identifying products, reading the S sheets. All those are things that, you know, are hazmat oriented to 1407, but they double meeting an OSHA standard that you can, you know, utilize. So you can actually kill two birds in one stone and maximize your training. You're getting the results for OSHA. It can be documented that way, but it also falls under a hazmat area. So let's move on from firefighter. We talked a little bit about officer. We'll talk more about that, but let's get to the driver. You know, your engineers, your chauffeurs are the apparatus. Each year, drivers are required to have 12 hours of training a year if they're a driver of an apparatus. And if you look at that, it's perfect. 1 hour a month, you go through there. I broke it down in January. I put that in week two. You can rearrange this calendar any way you want, but week two I have it, emergency vehicle driving. In February I did positioning of apparatus. March I did hydraulics. I did pump operations in April. In May I did water supply. In June, standpipe sprinklers, apparatus maintenance, foam operations, service testing, master stream operations. Capacity pump operations drill, aerial ops, and maximizing water hydrant operations. You know, it just kind of continues as we go out through the year there. What this does, if you look through the NFPA standards, all this stuff is in NFPA standards, and that's 1002. And there's a lot more topics you can add in there. So each year, you can take this calendar as a format. It doesn't have to mirror it each year. You can add other topics in. Like with SCBA, if you want to get very specific in firefighter for SCBA, you can. You can give exactly what you want done in there. You can lay this out. Well, what is this doing? What does this do for an organization? Well, first of all, it gives them a training plan. Part of what most folks don't have is a good training plan for the year. They're planning weekly, or they're trying to get, you know, pieces of information. If this is set up for the year, one of the things that you can use is your personnel that may be, you know, the untapped resource within your organization. If they're experts or they're very good, like, say, in pumping apparatus, well, maybe you want that person talking about hydraulics, and especially if they can do pump calculations. You know, those are the folks that you want to tap into. Plus, it gets people involved, but it also gives people a different perspective on who's teaching. It allows folks to be engaged and share a little more. The big piece is trying to get all the things that you need to get to train your people, all the items that you need to have accomplished throughout the year for training that's important. One, for survivability, for their functionability, and to ensure everyone goes home. And that goes to officers making decisions, to firefighters being able to be thinking firefighters, to drivers being able to be proficient in operating an apparatus or pumping apparatus, to getting into how we work as a company, how we work as multiple companies. And that's where I threw in week five at, was the multiple company drill. Is every third month there is an extra week. That's when you throw in your multi-company drill. Part of what you have every year is live fire training per OSHA standards. So when you come together, you do the drills that include some live fire training, potentially one of those week five quarterly drills or every third month drills. You also look at bringing your companies together and running evolutions that are not single company evolutions for drills, but require multiple companies where one engine is having to reverse lay and pump back to the first engine, or where you're doing a forward lay, where you're supplying aerial apparatus, where you may have multiple apparatus coming in to do fire attack on a building, where you may have to go do rural water supply to pump back. And again, you know, even though you're doing a multi-company drill, part of what you may have is in water supply operations, that may be what you prep your folks for the drill. So all this is somewhat related, and you can set this up however you would like in here with the topics and moving around. And again, these are not all the topics in 1 year that you could cover. Those standards are full of job performance requirements that could go specifically in here. In the calendar that I have, I made them pretty generic for folks to be able to use. That way they could break that component down or that area down and be more specific, add in the JPRs that they wanted. So what does this do? Well, if you're a volunteer company, you're coming together, say twice a month. Well, you can look and say, okay, in these months we want to do firefighter training these nights, and say January is going to be firefighter training. In February, you may do a firefighter training topic, and you may do some officer and driver training as well. So you add those components in. You can make this schedule work however you need for whatever the complexity of your department is. The other thing of it is we know good and well that most volunteer departments can't all the training hours most of the time. It's required for ISO. That's one of the areas that is very difficult. If you do happen to have the ability to have a learning management system, and it will automatically probably do records management for you, there are a ton of these companies that are out there. And if you have the ability to afford being able to purchase the use of their learning management system, most of these build topics. So you can assign these, and these individuals in your organization can do these training topics at any time they want to during the week, not just a training night. Some of that can be information that builds on what you're going to do on your training night, so you get it assigned out ahead of time. Those are very good to use. And again, there's a multitude of these learning management systems, and all of them come with some type of records management system that help you out. Most of them can generate a specific ISO report. Our organization has one. I can set it up and run reports, and I can get everything out. I can do it as it progresses through the year, that type of stuff, and be able to share with officers, with the battalion chiefs, with chief officers. Firefighters actually see those as a credential on their homepage. So that helps them out to know where they're at. But you can take these canned assignments that are there, which are educational. It counts for ISO. It also helps with your training, especially if you don't have somebody that's dedicated to being able to write curriculums or programs or put things together. If you are an organization that has that capability, these training learning management platforms will allow you to customize and create your own style of delivery that you want, to include videos, to include PowerPoints, those type of things. So you can research those. If you want more information on different companies that have that, you can reach out to me. I'll give you my contact information again at the end of the show. But as I continue to talk about this, you know, one of the things, and I'm going to go and just use our organization here in Horry County, South Carolina, with some of our complexities. I set this calendar up and shared it, and we do a lot of the training that gets it out. Our specialty teams, like our hazmat team, our dive rescue marine team, our rescue group, our wildland team, they do various trainings through the year. A good example is coming up. Some of our folks that are wildfire officers and they actually deploy in the FEMA system, they're going to be doing what is known as a limbing and bucking class. It's chainsaw operations. And, you know, here if we get a hurricane or if we get an ice storm by chance here in South Carolina along the coast, we get a lot of trees that go down. So limbing and bucking and actually doing chainsaw operations under bad conditions or under any condition, wildland, whatever it may be, is very dangerous. So that's an area of training folks that, that we can focus on. So they're going to be doing specialty training for their team on that. You know, and that's just one example that comes into one of the things that, you know, we like to do and our Marine team does is for our boats, they're constantly doing some type of boat training. We range from a large fire boat that responds out into the ocean, does rescue operations, it does fire suppression, both out on open water and inland water as well, to our smaller boats, which are rescue-style boats that we utilize on the waterways and on the rivers, to inflatable boats that we use in emergency water situations, especially during hurricanes or flooding events, those type of operations. But, you know, they do a set training. So you can set that type of stuff up as, you know, the bigger organizations. Again, I want to let our callers know if you're tuning in and you just tuned in, you're interested in being involved in this conversation a little further, you can call in and be a part of the show. That number is 760-454-8852. Once you're in, press 1. So let's go out and talk a little bit away from this training calendar, but really reflecting back to it and get into ISO. A lot of people struggle when it comes to ISO. So let's talk a little bit about what company training really is, that 192 hours, that 16 hours a month you're trying to accomplish to get maximum credit. So what is company training? Typically, it's going to be associated around firefighter operations, something that you're going to be doing as a company together. That's associated to things that are in 1001 standards. That's really what we're focused on. Now, if you look at NFPA 1001, that's a pretty big standard. And of course, in NFPA 1001, you know that it obviously has several chapters that are associated to not only Firefighter 1, but also Firefighter 2. Chapter 4 is associated to Firefighter 1. Chapter 5 is associated to Firefighter 2. And Chapter 6 is Emergency Medical Services. So a lot of folks don't think about company-level training as being Emergency Medical Services, but it is in 1001. So let's take a look and get to Chapter 4. I'm actually in the 1001 standard, and I want to hit a couple of places within that chapter just to begin talking about it. So under there, there's some general knowledge stuff that you know, they want you to know, some prerequisite skills, things to get in there. So I'm just going to pick one. Activate an emergency call for assistance given vision obscured conditions, PPE, department SOP, so that a firefighter can be located and rescued. Well, if you think about it, that sounds just like calling a mayday. That's exactly what it is. If we look at firefighter training, and we're talking about rapid intervention, that may be one of the topics you cover that night, which was, for us, February. You would look at something, you know, in that. That's where I placed it in a calendar. If you're looking at fire ground operations, you know, this duty shall involve performing activities necessary to ensure life safety, fire control, and property conservation. So if you're looking at that, part of what gets into that is if you're trying to do life safety, you know, components to ensure that, you may be talking about the 16 life safety initiatives. You may be talking about cancer prevention. You know, some of that doubles in there in the standard when I talk about decontamination from fire scenes. All these are just little topics. If you go through the NFPA 1001 standard, there are so many of these little topics that you can put in that are job performance requirements, JPRs, that are listed. So operating in areas of an emergency and given personal protective equipment, traffic, and scene control devices, at a structure fire or a roadway emergency, traffic hazards, down power lines, whatever it is, being able to control that traffic per your SOPs. Well, right there is a total class for the night, which is traffic incident management, TIMS. So these are things that you can get into, and that's just a couple examples out of Chapter 4. Under Chapter 5, which is Firefighter 2, a little more, you know, activity in there, a little higher level because you're moving up in what they expect you to be able to perform. So a good example is communicate the need for team assistance, given fire department communications equipment, SOP, and the team, so that your supervisor is constantly informed of team needs. Well, that's doing nothing more than doing CAN reports, conditions, actions, and needs. So you see how this goes, you know, through. So I want to get to Chapter 6. This is something that is forgotten, unfortunately, with some folks. And I do have a caller on the line. I'm going to bring them in. I have a 434 number. Who do I have on the line?
Khalil Cottrell Reed. I'm calling from Charlottesville, Virginia, and I'm a big fan of police and fire.
Okay. So what's on your mind tonight, my friend?
I have a question, and I have an idea. One of the ideas is to make all fire, police, and military areas, animal hospitals, human hospitals, like fireproof, like impervious to burning. But also, like, I was wondering, like, I was told that when they do movies and things, and the fire department has to be on the set when they do things like shooting blanks, because those are more fire hazards than the original firearms. I was told that sparks, when something makes a spark, it's more likely to cause a fire when it doesn't, or electricity and stuff like that.
Well, I'm not super familiar with some of the forensics that go into the dynamics of pyrotechnics and with, like, the blanks and things. There are some folks that do that. Some areas, I know that one point in time that we were getting ready to have a group come in and do some filming when I was a fire chief, and I didn't have a lot of information. They wanted to use some pyrotechnics. They wanted to use some other techniques in there. But, yes, we were required to be there. Some of their sets are obviously not going to be fireproof, as you're saying. Some of them are very flammable, obviously. So a lot of it comes back to your fire codes and what's required underneath that. There is a specific component in how you relate that to that. There are some folks that are probably a lot higher experts in the Hollywood, California area, in the Wilmington, North Carolina area that could answer that question much better than me. But
okay.
Obviously, if you're a department that has that, that is a training component that you have to go in there. And, of course, the code side is a whole different show in itself. So, well, thank you for calling in. Any further questions you got?
I was wondering, as far as, like, alarms, like both emergency and fire alarms and exit signs, I was told that they, like, all the emergency codes all over the area and all over the world, they have exit signs and everything all over the world, but they say something different, and they have, like, different type of fire codes everywhere.
And that is adoptable by jurisdiction or state, and depending on what your actual legislation says for a state and for your jurisdiction. I'll give you a good example. The state, if they adopt a fire code and you are a municipality, part of what you have to do is put into your municipal ordinances the adoption of those fire codes. You can't undercut them, but you can go above them. And, you know, most of the time somebody's following a national standard of those. There are several of those standards that are out there.
Well, thank you, sir.
I certainly appreciate you calling in, and again, to our listeners, if you are there, 760-454-8852. Once you get into the host queue, press 1. We certainly appreciate our caller coming on. Great questions that were there. Thanks for joining in. Going back to what we were talking about, good conversation there, good dialogue about some concerns, and that's one of the areas for officers to be versed in is understanding how there is some applicability to fire codes and how that actually relates into fireground operations, into the health and safety of firefighters. I can promise you that fire codes will save more firefighters than anything in the world. I'm telling you, the building codes, the fire codes help make it safe for us to be in some of these buildings. Understanding that, understanding how buildings, again, building construction, if you've listened to the show and you've listened to the collaboration that Chris Nahm on Taking It to the Streets and I have done over the last year and focusing in on building construction, the different type of buildings, some of the strategies, the tactics, the hazards that are associated to that, you'll understand. Some of the guests we've had on the show are super guests. Just throwing that out there if you want to go back and pick those up for a review. In Emergency Medical Services under Chapter 6 of 1001, it talks about emergency medical responder, some of the knowledge. It talks about emergency medical technicians, the AEMT, the paramedics that are there. That's in a standard part of it that it gives it to it, is the authority having jurisdiction shall determine the level of emergency medical services. But levels of service that you're looking at, I gave you those, first aid, emergency responders and all. But if you're doing something as a company and you're doing evolutions, and part of your evolution would be, you know, taking care of a patient or a scenario, a motor vehicle accident, because that's one of those things that, you know, is in the standard if you look for it, you know, of rescue and removal of victims from, you know, structures, from, you know, apparatus or from vehicles, those type of things. So, you know, there's a lot in the 1001 standard that you could put into your calendar throughout the year, and that calendar having each week of the month having some type of topic out of 1001, which is your firefighter standard. So, again, we took week two in the calendar. You can, again, you can arrange this calendar any way that you want to arrange it. We put driver in there in that one, and we looked at NFPA 1002. Well, one of the pieces that you have to look at for driver is there is an apparatus equipped with a fire pump, apparatus equipped with an aerial device. There is also the tractor-drawn tiller apparatus. There's aircraft fire rescue. There's mobile water supply. There's wildland fire apparatus that are all in the driver-operator standards for 1002. So looking at this, if you look at your driver-operator training program that you're doing, when you're doing driver training throughout the year, if you've got an engine, if you have a ladder truck, you have a tender or a tanker, and you have a brush truck, well, there's four categories that you can look at. You know, the operation and the use of those, and the driving, the positioning, the hydraulics, the pump operations, and doing water supply with those, you could fill up a whole year in no time with just the little pieces that come out of 1002. You know, that's the things that sit in there. Picking up officer out of NFPA 1021, very easy to look at. There are a lot of components in 1021, specifically whatever level that the officer is at. So that's one of the uniquenesses that you have to look at. Fire officer 1, fire officer 2, 3, or 4, that's chapter 4, chapter 5, chapter 6, chapter 7, respectively. You know, chapter 4 really quickly here, which is the fire officer 1, that's generally your folks that are lieutenants or company officers. And one of the components in there is direct unit members during a training evolution given a company training, evolution and training policies and procedures so that the evolution is performed in accordance with safety plans and efficiency. Well, part of what you can even do is your officers could help develop some of these training plans that you want. And that's what you should have. You can have a topic all day long for your month, or you can have a topic for your training that's coming up that week. But without having a plan to go with that topic is going to be a problem. Now, you can reach out on the internet. You can Google a lot of things on the internet and be able to find training curriculums. If you've got ISTA manuals, you can get the PowerPoints that go with them. There's drills that go with those. There's all kinds of pieces that you can look at to get what you need for that. One of the places that I was involved with for a number of years, still as a past president to the organization of the International Society of Fire Service Instructors, is they have training grants. And you can get, if you're a member, and if you're going to be in the world of training, especially if you're someone that's just been placed into a training officer's position, or if you're a training officer or you're responsible for training and you're looking for help, the International Society of Fire Service Instructors, ISFSI, is a great place for you to go look for help. They have a lot of resources on their website. They have a lot of people that are resources for you to tap into and be able to do that. So another one I want to throw out to you from January 18th, 2010, 52 weekly firefighter drills on fireengineering.com. You can go there, and again, that gives you 52 weeks, tells you 52 drills. You know, it's resources that are out there. So that's, you know, one of the pieces I want you to realize is you've got a lot of things at your fingertips that you can actually reach out and utilize to make your training better. So let's go back and kind of wrap around to this. Is one area I haven't talked so much about, but is important as well, is your facility hours. One of the things that's going to be difficult for a lot of departments is they do not have a dedicated training facility that they can go to. That makes it difficult. If you don't have a training facility for your organization, you may be having to travel to the state training facility. You may have to be traveling to, you know, a county training facility, or maybe four or five departments over's training facility. That becomes very difficult, you know, in doing things. It's a very logistical nightmare in being able to maintain coverage and standards of cover within your jurisdiction while you're taking folks over to train. Do you take everybody out of your district? How do you do that? So there's a lot of logistics to go to that. One of the things that has happened probably in the last 10 to 15 years specifically is a lot of your state agencies, a lot of your training agencies have gone to having mobile props. And those count towards facility hours and training. A good example is if you have an airport and you're responsible for doing some airport firefighting, even if it's a small airport, one of the things that you can actually do is there's companies that come in and they bring these mobile props for aircraft training, for fire rescue training on aircraft. So that is considered a mobile prop, which can be considered as a facility. We have a mobile prop here in Horry County as well as a training facility. We move the mobile prop around so that it's easier for our companies. Now, we're a relatively large organization. The county's 1,255 square miles. So getting to our training center from along the coast, because it's back in inland a ways towards the west, takes a considerable amount of time. But being able to move that unique training trailer that we have, it's capable of doing live fire. It's capable of doing standpipe and sprinkler operations. It has the ability to do pitched roof and flat roof ventilations. It has the ability for us to do ladder operations and has stairs that you can do hose operations to go up or down. there's so much that is, you know, there for the capability of being able to conduct training at a facility to do evolutions even, especially with single company or multi-company, that can be moved around. Your state agencies have a lot of those. A good example of those, I know West Virginia University has those that they move around the state, the Fire Service Extension. I know Kentucky has a lot of mobile props. I know that Missouri has some. I've seen them in Iowa. So I know they exist and they're out there. Part of what you have to be able to do is tap into that resource and be able to get those there to help with facility training. That's probably going to be one of your biggest challenges. One of the things that I will make sure that I do throw out here is if you're conducting live fire training evolutions, you need to be doing that by NFPA 1403. And if you do have a fixed facility, that makes it a lot better. An acquired structure is a lot more complex. So that's a whole nother show in itself. But basically, to kind of go back and recap what we've talked about, is it's important to have a training plan. No matter what type of organization you have, no matter how big, how small, you need to have a training plan that you're following suit with. The other part of that is capturing and documenting your training. We do a lot more training in the fire service than whatever gets captured, and that's one of our downfalls. By having a good records management system or a good way of capturing your training is important, and being able to categorize it into the right areas to get maximum credit in your ISO for what you're trying to do for your insurance rating, your ISO rating within your jurisdiction, of whether it is company-level training, whether it falls for facility, driver, hazardous materials. That's something we haven't talked a lot about. It's required 6 hours a year, and again, we talked a little bit about that when we talked about some of the OSHA stuff and tying it into HAZMAT, which is NFPA 472. If you get into looking at that standard, there's a lot in there. There's the competency for operations level, the competencies for awareness level. If you're mission-based, if you have technicians, your incident commanders, if you have specialists, if you have folks that are in their officer role of HAZMATs, the safety officers with there, if you got tank cars, cargo, it's a really hefty standard. So most of our folks are going to be operating out of Chapter 4 and 5, maybe Chapter 6, but predominantly probably Chapter 5, which is your HAZMAT operations level that you would be operating out of. So, again, 6 hours for HAZMAT. So just to kind of go back and recap here, we've been talking for almost an hour on this topic, is that creating a plan is really important. One of the things that we don't want to do is waste people's time when it's time to train. That's time that we can't get back, and it's time that's critical. The next place that I want to hit on is some of this stuff, and I'm sure there are people that are listening or saying, oh, my God, this is overwhelming. It's not as bad as you think. It looks like a great big daunting task, but there are ways that you can tackle this elephant and be able to eat it, and it's one bite at a time. And that's being able to break down what you can do and what you can't do. The worst thing you can try to do is do more stuff that's irrelevant to your fire department's operations than what's really applicable. So, again, that's a reality check, is looking and really understanding what your fire department does, knowing that it probably goes to fires, it probably does some operational level of HAZMAT, it does have officers who have to function as officers, and it more than likely will do some type of motor vehicle accident and maybe give or take in some areas, whether it's doing medical responses or not. Those are the big ones. Most organizations have to get to a pretty good size before they start doing a lot of the specialty groups like hazmat teams and dive teams and marine firefighting rescue teams and wildland teams and rescue teams, things like that. The area I want to touch before we get out of here is the OSHA standard. And one of the things that will happen is if there is not an OSHA standard, the OSHA groups are going to reference what is known as the general duty clause. And the general duty clause is that we have to provide a safe environment. So what if they don't have a standard, they're going to revert back to the industry standard, which is going to be the NFPA standards. So just kind of throwing that out there, there's a few things that a lot of people don't recognize they really need to be covering for hazard or for OSHA, like hazmat identification. That and being able to identify hazmats, going through all your right to know, understanding SDSs, making sure your SDSs are up to date and your books up to date in your station, all that type of stuff is training that's required. Rapid intervention, that's under 29 CFR 1910-134, your respiratory protection standard, in paragraph G, subsections 3 and 4. You know, that's where it goes to, but the industry standard for us in FPA is 1407, but we also have the respiratory protection, which falls into the SCBA, falls into your N95 mask, which is particularly important in today's time period, especially with all the COVID components that's there. If you have PAPRs, if you're using P100s, those type of things that you have to cover. You have to make sure that if you're operating as far as awareness with transfer operations, you have to do that training. Fall protection, confined space awareness. If you're doing confined space entry, you have to do a lot more. We talk about the respiratory protection. That's something that's every year that you need to cover with your folks, making sure that you're doing all the things with the SCBA or your mask, respiratory fit testing. Before somebody can actually have a fit test on an SCBA, they're supposed to have a physical that meets the respiratory protection standard, which is 1910-134. We're doing bloodborne and airborne pathogens. Those are the things that fall into some of the everyday occurrences that you're going to run into, especially if you're doing medical responses. You have to do hazmat. You have to do hazmat decon, hazardous energy, eye and hearing protection. All those are things. But if you think about all those I covered, a lot of those go into your firefighter areas, personal protective equipment. Personal protective equipment could be considered the stuff with fall protection, or you take fall protection and you tie it to your ladders. You can take the eye protection that goes to your PPE. Your hazardous energy control, that's your lockout, tagout type stuff. Anytime that you're talking about electrical hazards or doing fire ground operations or any type of rescue, that's something that is added in there that you can document specifically as part of your training. So, again, this calendar exists. It's really just nothing more than a guide of how you can go about putting together your training plans for the year and how you can go about getting your maximum hours for ISO. So just kind of tied in, if you want to get a hold of this calendar, if you have questions or anything, you can contact me. The first way is by email. That's Kline, D, C-L-I-N-E, D as in Doug, at horrycounty.org, H-O-R-R-Y, county is spelled out, .org. Or you can reach out to me via phone at 919-730-7434. Covered a lot over the hour of this show on fire and training. Again, I want to thank you for calling in, our guests for calling in. Thank you for tuning in. And again, fire and training is a show that's dedicated to the men and women in the street who are important, who need good training, who need the information that they need every day to do their job. Our goal here is to provide the best information and training that we possibly can to enhance their ability to do the job, but most of all, to ensure that everyone does go home. Thank you for tuning in. This is a good kickoff to the year. Happy New Year to everyone. Again, if you got any questions or you want some information, please reach out to me. Be more than happy to share what I've put together for folks to be able to utilize. Again, thanks, Fire Engineering. We're looking forward to being in Indianapolis in just a few months with FDIC International 22. Great show on tap. Bobby Halton and the folks from Fire Engineering, and they've put together a show like you will not believe, the greatest show, fire show on earth. And I'm looking forward to seeing everyone there. It'll be good to be back together in full-fledged and being able to get a opportunity to share information and to network and to be with old friends and make new ones. Again, thanks to Fire Engineering and Bobby Halton and the whole staff there for allowing us to have Fire and Training on Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio. Until next time, stay safe. We're off the air, and we will see you on an episode soon. Thanks for tuning in.